Today on the Cooligans, we got a special guest co-host, the one and only Maddie FC is here to talk all things about Arsenal destroying football, Manchester United saving football, maybe?
Hopefully. And we're also going to talk a little bit about Brazil. I mean, a lot of people are counting them out, but I could maybe see a 6-star going on that shirt. Yep. And yes, Christian is wearing a beautiful, beautiful Brazilian kit now.
I'm only here to support the guests as much as I can. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. On Tuesday, had the privilege of hosting the NYCFC Homecoming Gala. So this is like for their, it's like a fundraiser for like their charity whole thing. And I don't know if you've seen all the mini pitches that they build around New York City, the blue fields or whatever with the NYCFC logo. So that's been a big part of just like, giving back to the city and all the other stuff. So I got to host the Homecoming Gala for that fundraiser. All the players were there and this whole thing. It was an honor. This podcast wouldn't exist without NYCFC. We started in the stands, in the supporter section. So it's like a dream. It was really, really cool. All the players were there and stuff. But I told you this recently that I've been practicing Portuguese.
You have told me this.
I did. So I'm like learning and I built up the courage. I went up to Talis Magno.
What'd you say?
I said,
oh boy.
No. And he was proud of me. I said, I said, Talis, estou praticando português un dia, quero entrevistar em português.
This guy, get a Brazilian passport, bro. That's amazing. That's amazing.
I'm there,
and
dog.
You told me you started doing this one.
February 2nd.
Amazing. I'm so proud. That's amazing.
Thank you, man.
And he was happy.
Hey, that's pretty good. Also, I was like, he responded in English, and I'm like, yo, why is your English so good? His English is fantastic.
There you go.
And he was on loan at Corinthians or Vasco da Gama or something like that. He was just there for a year. And when he first got here, I knew he didn't speak much English. And his English is like pretty strong.
I think he's picking up. You're around the environment a lot. I mean, I don't know. What Brazilians pick up the English language pretty quickly, to be honest, if you're around it most of the time.
Okay.
But it sounds like you had two bilingual people there now. You sounded amazing.
Thank you.
We got to do a Portuguese version of this podcast.
That's it, bro. We got to lean in. Because, I know you hear this a lot, too, because I'm sure people ask you. Oh, also, this is Maddie FC, everybody.
I'm not Alexis. I am not Alexis. I know me and Alexis have a lot of similarities.
We'll get the whole, I'll give his bonus is in a little bit, but Maddie is joining the show today because Alexis is in Ireland. But I'm sure you get this a lot too, where people or brands are like, can you do more content in Portuguese and stuff? Because the Brazilian market is
limitless,
absolutely massive. So it might be a thing. Who knows? Maddie and Christian doing Portuguese.
That'll be a nice little series in Brazil.
little pão de queijo reviews.
I had that this morning. I had pão de queijo this morning.
So who knows where that ends up. But yeah, it's a maybe it's like a New Year's resolution thing. I especially on my like TikTok, I see language learner. Have you seen that guy, Yuji, the guy that he's like, hey, I can speak your language. And he's like in random places all over the world.
Yeah, but that guy's like...
That guy's great.
ChatGPT in real life.
He'll know like a Swahili dialect with like clicks. And he like is nailing it. And people are like, oh my God, like, how do you know my language? And he's like, I'm Japanese and all that. So, but the fact that people are so flattered when you speak their language is like, that's the sort of feeling I want to elicit. Like, I'm trying to actually learn. So that's why. That's been my mission.
That's awesome.
All right. I mean, I'm going to call you a couple times so I can get some.
Don't worry. You got me on speed dial. We're all good.
Get some practice. Again, so shout out to NYCFC. It was super, super fun. So it was great to do that. All right. Let's get started, everybody. Welcome to the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco, and I'm joined by my special guest co-host today. He doesn't even know about this.
Soundboard.
We got the soundboard.
Feel free. I'm going to be typing that all day today.
We got a familiar... We got the familiar.
So
no, that was the wrong one.
That sucked.
That one's good too, though. Ooh, I like that one. All right. Well, so when the bars drop.
Okay, well, I'm making you feel at home,
bro. Yeah, yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Maddie Farias, Maddie FC, everybody, especially when it comes to, I mean, anything, Manchester United, you are my go-to. But then also Brazil, anything Brazil, Brazilian related, whether it's the football or food, you're my guy. But yeah, and also my, you know, I guess co-host in Sacrosito.
Yes, sir.
So we've worked together already for like, I don't know, it's been like 6 months.
Was it September we started?
I think so.
Yeah.
And that, which is where we really first met, but the chemistry already.
From the beginning.
From the beginning was clearly there. So I'm honored to have you join me here. Let's start. How about, we have a lot to go over today. Obviously, we're going to talk about a lot of Premier League and Brazilian national team. But we have to start today with your favorite team, or your least favorite team, Arsenal Football Club. Arsenal just beat Brighton 1-0. They are 7 points ahead of Manchester City at the top of the table. Arsenal fans used to brag about playing the quote-unquote beautiful game, and now they park the bus, they waste time, and grind out 1-0 wins like prime Jose Mourinho. Did Mikel Arteta sell Arsenal's soul to win, and are they actually killing the sport, or is everyone else just mad that they finally figured it out? Maddie, what are your first quick thoughts to that statement?
Anti-football. Anti-football.
This is the top topic.
It's one of those things where you said it perfectly. The fact that it used to be the beautiful game. Arsenal always said, oh, we don't win the league, but we always play proper. The fans love it. You don't see that. WrestleMania in the six-yard box is not.
It is. I will say this. With Arsenal, it's surprising that it's Arsenal that are doing this, where we know, you know, like I remember reading Arsene Wenger's book and he talks so much about like having a philosophy and a style of play that is so embedded to the club itself that no matter who manages the club, you saw it for a year, for like really 25, 30 years. You knew what Arsenal, how they were going to play. Yep. You knew if a player was signed to Arsenal, you're like, that because he fits. That yep. You knew that, like, you can't just put anybody on that team. And the fact that they would like diverge from that is shocking, but you understand why, right? You know, you give up something, you give up basically entertaining human beings. You
everything. Everything.
You give up,
at what cost?
Yeah, right. You give up enjoying watching them for wins. And I think, you know, the 2 second place finishes in a row is, I think, where Arteta was like, okay, that's it. Devil, we're shaking hands.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can't do this anymore. I'm getting too close and I have to. I just have to taste success once, and then maybe we'll see what happens after that.
That's what happens, man. when you don't win a trophy for 5 years, you look yourself in the mirror and say, you know what? My job's on the line. It's getting rough.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I have to win by any means. And listen, for Arsenal fans, it's fun to win. So people can say, oh, it's not fun to see. But at the end of the day, it's fun to win. So if you're winning games, that's all that matters. I just don't like the style that they're doing it. I'm not saying that Arsenal doesn't play any type of proper football. They have good plays. But 16 goals from corners, I think it is.
That's
joint with, I think, West Brom and another team. That's not good enough.
Yeah, in the game against Brighton, they obviously, we were just looking at the stat, but they were essentially the stat was like they had 30 minutes of wasted time, which even as I'm watching the game, I'm like, I'm going to just turn on to the Man City game because this is, I'm just not enjoying watching this. And that's not to say like Arsenal fans shouldn't be happy about the 3 points and getting the 7 point lead or whatever, like do your thing. But I'm a neutral. Yeah. I'm like, I'm also not going to just like, I get it like from the context of like the bigger storyline, but bro, it's like, if I have to pick one game to watch, it ain't going to be this one. Yeah. Can you put that graphic back up?
I don't believe that graphic. That's like, I wasn't watching the game, but the graphic said what? 30 minutes? Let me read this correctly.
Right.
Look at this. 30 minutes and 51, not even 30, 51 seconds too. That's huge right there.
You got to count those as
well. Yeah, every second counts when it comes to ruining football. And to restart play, it's ridiculous. Highest total in a Premier League match this season. I mean, and from what I saw, because I wasn't watching the game because I don't support anti-football. But what I do know
it's against your religion. Yeah.
Exactly. So what I do know is I was seeing clips wasting time in the 40th minute. Come on. What are we doing in the 40th minute? Yeah. What are you, 20th place trying to?
I understand if it's like, you know, a World Cup, like Suriname is playing against France.
Yeah.
I kind of get that.
Yeah.
But this can't be the way things are done. And it brings up an interesting dilemma in like, you know, how badly do you want to win, right? Like, we're complaining. If Alexis was sitting in your seat right there, he would be like, hey, this is the game nowadays.
If Man United were winning like this, I'll be like, no, this is a new game. This is a new age.
But then, I don't, you know, the internet was not what the internet was when Chelsea's, when Mourinho's Chelsea's were winning, which was fairly similar with like, you know, low scoring games and just holding on to leads. And because we expect that from Mourinho, I think the understanding is like, okay, well, they got it done. And this is how he does it. It's not a shock to anybody, but Arsenal, one of the premier teams to see some, you know, attractive, fun football. They've had like incredible players, and even, you know, after, I mean, we have the Invincibles era, but even after that, and when it comes to just the litany of players that are just, what is the Odegaards, just the Giroud's, or what the Scorpion Kicks. I mean, there was just entertaining.
The tiki-taka, those crazy tiki-taka plays in the box.
Santi Cazorla, exactly. Like, there's just so many great moments. And they're just saying like, hey, that's fun and all, but we it's not winning us trophies.
Yeah. I think what hurts me the most is the corners. I think the stat over here says the best. Everything with the corners. This one, the delays. Over 2 hours in total, averaging 4 minutes, 18 seconds per match. Just on corners. And then you have, away from that, the corners, what they're doing in the box, the goalkeepers. It's like, that's what's getting me really upset. It's like, okay, time wasting's whatever. They still have good goals. But just what they took the advantage of with the corners, it just really gets me mad, because the Emirates celebrates like they scored every time they get a corner. They get excited. And Saka, Rice, they know how to play that ball beautifully into the box. But I'm telling you right now, there's going to be a rule change this summer, because what they're doing in the box to these goalkeepers, it's not correct.
I would even say it's not even that they're mad that like Arsenal does it and sort of takes advantage of it. It's that every other Premier League is also doing it. Every other Premier League team is doing it. They're copying because they see that it works. So even in the game against Chelsea, when they were just like, again, packing the box, like there used to be at least some, you know, a trick play here and there, like a fun, like find that. Who was it? I think it was Chelsea also as well, that they, during Arsenal corners, they were keeping players out so that the Arsenal were forced to defend.
It's a way to counter it, I guess.
And prevent a counter. So that it look, but did it really help? I mean, they still scored. They scored all goals off set pieces. Yeah. An own goal and then two goals.
Yeah, they love it so much. They're scoring on themselves, man. You know how crazy you gotta love corners so much that you're scoring themselves.
Look, we can complain and complain.
They're winning.
That's the frustrating frustrating. Look, it's frustrating for everybody else. And I'm a fan of a different team winning the Premier League. Fair. Like, do I think Everton is gonna win it? No,
one day.
I gotta just be like practical and pragmatic and just be like, all right, for as a neutral, who do I want? Like, what's the sort of best storyline? And somebody else winning it that's not Man City, or maybe Liverpool, sort of. But I mean, Man City more, since they've been so dominant the last like 8 years. That part of it is just like, okay, that's what makes me like. Every time Arsenal does get a corner, I'm like, okay, I don't love this, but at the very least, like, it's leading to Man City not winning.
Yeah, no.
And I get to see somebody else win it.
I agree.
But that's the frustration. I think that moment sort of came to a head when I was like, you know, the City game is on against Nottingham, and then and Arsenal, and I was like, the Arsenal game is by far the least entertaining out of all the match choices. And that's the part that is like a shame, I think, for a lot of people, because you want to see, even if Manchester United are playing Arsenal, you still want to see an entertaining game, even if maybe your team, I mean, I know you don't want them to lose, but you still want to be entertained.
So. I mean, I'll just wrap it up by saying this. Arsenal, man, they're winning. That's all that matters.
Sure.
So we can complain, we can be upset, but they're not going to care. They're winning the matches. But yeah, that's what happens when you five years out of trophy.
All right, now let's get to your team, Manchester United.
Now we're talking football. Now we're talking proper football. Here we go.
A few months ago, the man across from me said that Manchester United were in a hopeless place, like Rihanna says. okay? But today, Matty FC is in the Cooligan studio. I don't know why he's going to. Is he going to apologize to the whole red half of Manchester? I don't know. But you can look into the camera, Matty. Are United actually back in third place right now? Or is this fake? Is this not real, what we're seeing right now for Manchester United?
United is winning the Premier League this season. They are back. I don't want top four. Top four race is too easy.
Top one.
Yeah. Top four is already guaranteed. Give me first place. That was my thought process before the game yesterday.
Okay.
And now this morning I woke up and thought, man, that was really bad. Ten men. But
this is the first loss in the Carrick, this Carrick era.
First loss in 2026. Damn. I don't know what it is. I forgot this feeling. I don't know what it's like to lose.
What? 2025? Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. We don't talk about 2025. But man, it's you know, I'm one of the positive fan accounts in that realm.
Yeah.
And I try to stay positive, and I always try to figure out the silver lining. But this game was bound to happen. I mean, you look at the past couple of games, we got bailed out by a couple red cards, and not the greatest performances. But this one was bad. A whole half down with even them down a man. Newcastle down a man. Still not able to get over the finish
line. Bro, I'm
very
familiar with being down a man against Manchester United, Everton.
And scoring Puskas goals.
Kieran Dewsbury-Hall scoring an absolute banger. And that wasn't even a red card. That was like from doing something to your team. Our team. One of our player slapped his own teammate.
I didn't even get a red card for that.
I think the last time it happened, it was also in the Premier League. I remember it happened. Was it a Newcastle? I forgot. It was like black and white. It might have been like Blackburn Rovers or something like that. Okay. But it was a similar thing. A guy, it might have been a fist. Like it was like a real fight between two teammates and the guy got sent off. But I want to like break this down a little bit and figure out, because what you do say, like you are one of the more positive voices. And you know, we've had several matches. I'm like, Manchester United is more a part of my life than I ever thought it would be, because I'm friends with so many content creators around Manchester United. I've been to England. I've hung out with Flex. I've done Flex United, United View, Adam McColl. I'm like, why do I even know all these names?
Yep. And you're
know
in the circle.
Good Vibes John is the homie.
That's my guy right there.
Okay.
That's my guy. Shout out John.
So all these people, I have a softer spot in my heart for Manchester United, because I know so many people that are involved in there. But you are one of the more positive voices, and almost to the degree where it's almost like delusional, right? The Ruben Amorim thing. And so my question to you is like, how do you I love that you stay 10 toes down in what you believe in, which is important. But there are so many, you have so many fans and so many comments and everything of people being like, no, you got to get rid of Ruben Amorim. And you're like, no, we got to stick with it. So even is there like infighting? Is there a lot of like, is it frustrating to kind of be that sort of like hold your own perspective and think that this is like sort of the best for the club? And then deal with the negativity. And then also with the fact that after Ruben Amorim is gone, the team seems to be better.
Yeah. It's very interesting. And I think before I get into the ripple effect from being 10 toes down and all that, we need to also, you know, people not like this, but we need to give flowers to Ruben Amorim for helping build this out. All the signings that are popping off, Sesko and Bumo, Cunha, all these people are coming, elements. They all come from that era where Ruben was there.
True.
And I think he also got rid of a lot of things that were ruining the club. The attitudes, Garnacho, maybe the Rashfords. A lot of these things that a lot of people don't see behind the scenes. He even said it best. Maybe the results aren't on the pitch, but he promises outside the pitch, he's getting the job done. And every player that low came out in an interview. Many players came out and said that he helped kind of fix the culture up. Maybe he's not the greatest manager or head coach, but I think he fixed a lot, and we need to give credit to him. In terms of your question about the ripple effect, that's just a terrible thing, because now people say you can't be a Man United fan because you wanted the worst for us under Ruben. My whole thing was, after Ten Hag, I realized 10 years of just swapping managers, there has to be a point where we sit down, look ourselves in the mirror and say, you know what? Maybe it's not the manager. Maybe it's the players that are doing something wrong. So I said, after the Ten Hag thing, I'm backing whoever's coming. And Ruben Amorim, I backed him till the very, very end. And people hated me for it. But I said, we need to stick to something. And he left because obviously there was some tension between him and the board.
Right.
But now that he left, That's fine. Goodbye, Ruben. Now my next focus is I'm on Michael Carrick, and that's how I rock. So people want to say, oh, you can't support Man United now because you wanted the worst. No, no, no. I'm in an idea where I'm going to back the club where they want to go, and Michael Carrick's now my new Ruben Amorim, if that makes sense.
Let's go. There it is. So look, we're looking at his record, but 6 wins, 1 draw, and 1 loss, obviously.
Yep, yep.
The loss to Newcastle is, I mean, the way you lose is, Manchester United can't just do things slightly chill. No. That loss, I mean, Osula with that, which with a gorgeous goal. Lamend is just like, what?
It's unbelievable.
Maguire is like, I can't believe he shot that ball around me like that.
Malacia is getting a lot of hate because of the fact that he was, you know, not marked there. He finally gets an opportunity and does that, but yeah.
So my first question as far as the difference between, with this success, what is your first thought? Because I'm not watching, you know, every Manchester United game as intently. What is the difference after the post-Amorim era that was the immediate improvement, and why was the team so much better immediately after he left?
I think it gives opportunity for the attackers to not focus defensively because of the fact that you're playing in a 3-4-3, you kind of want those wing backs to get back.
Yeah.
So they could focus more on the attack. I also do think the new manager bounce is a thing. We've seen it across the league. We've seen it every time there's a new manager, except if you're a Spurs fan. That doesn't really happen.
A new manager is a guarantee. Like you're like flirting with relegation.
No, but honestly, that Arsenal City match was fun to watch, fantastic to watch. But these last 5 games have not been good. The Spurs game, Spurs were getting back into the game, and then they got a red card, and then changed from there.
Yeah.
And then you look at all the past games. That West Ham game, where the 5th game for the United strand, which
we'll talk about.
But that game was awful. And then these past couple 2 games, we were getting by. We were getting by the Crystal Palace game, and then it caught up with this one. I think the main difference, honestly, was just a breath of fresh air being, but it's looking like it's going back. It's like a roller coaster. Like, oh, nice, we got the new man, but it's going back. I need to see something very good versus Villa to confirm that we're back, to say that, oh, we're playing way better, because it's looking like we're going back to where we were.
And that game against Villa is really important as for when it comes to the Champions
League on points as well,
places and stuff like that. Because I've had the pleasure to see Manchester United in person at Old Trafford once. And look, it's clearly, like, I mean, the history of the club and everything. But then I saw them in the preseason last year in Atlanta when they played against Everton. And I had never seen this. When I went there, I don't think Bruno was there yet. Was he there yet? I don't know.
What year was it?
22? 23? He must have been there. Ronaldo was also there. Yep. But when I saw Bruno in preseason in Atlanta, I was literally like, this is one of the greatest footballers I've ever seen. Like, I say this because, you know, we don't get to see Premier League players in person often.
Yep.
But watching him play, even with like his frame, he's like a smaller guy. I was like, this dude is unbelievably skilled.
Unbelievable.
But it was the same one where he like was upset with Illiman and Jai and like, terrible,
which
like,
led to the goal for Everton to get.
So when you think about, I mean, sometimes was Ruben Amorim using him correctly? Because I think he did ask for some defensive support from Bruno. But a player like that seems to, like he should be thriving on any team he's on, but he occasionally has some bad days with Manchester.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, listen, for me, he's arguably one of the best midfielders in the world at the moment. I think he starts on any team in the world. Any team. And people call me crazy, but I think he could start on any club in the world. I mean, the guy right now has 14 assists. I think the record for most in one season is Kevin De Bruyne and one more individual, but at 20. And it's like, he could do this. 9 games left. He gets 6 more. He also has 7 goals, the 3rd highest. This guy does it all. And if you watch the game yesterday, the only one creating chances, he's always critiquing players in terms of being a good leader, you know? And for me, he's just an unbelievable player. And in terms of where he's being used, I think under Ruben, it was more of like the creator, the playmaker from kind of a more behind, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But I also love him at the 10. He's creating, he's scoring. He's one of the greatest.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that, you know, like, that he's not being, his like, his skill set is not being used to its best ability at times. But yeah, by like just looking at him, I'm like, this is he's better than everyone on
if
the pitch.
If he was on another team besides Man United, he would be like on Ballon d'Or shouts.
Okay, okay,
that's my take. Right.
All right, let's move on to United strand because Frank. Ilet, I don't know how he pronounces his last name.
I don't even know either.
Okay, but Frank.
Frank.
United Frank. Strand, that's what everybody knows. I want to talk about this story because he's come up a couple times on our show. And for us, like especially as comics, like the fact that anybody's doing something different in the football space like this, like I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, take
it. Yep. And it's like all positive. And we know that when he cuts his hair, he's going to like donate it to like a cancer, charity and all that stuff. Absolutely beautiful. But he gets a lot of hate from Manchester. And really, when I saw that he, when he was at Old Trafford and somebody pulled his hair, like that part of it was just so gross of somebody who's like clearly not doing anything to offend anybody. Yep. But people, because it is getting a lot of attention. Some people are annoyed with it, but the 4 out of 5, Manchester United won 4 out of 5 in the fifth game. You go, you're in Spain, with Frank. And this was, you guys did a kick stream. It was a big deal. Lots of people, it's got global attention.
I think you got at a point 300,000 concurrent viewers.
Congrats to him. I mean, this is, and again, to do something like this and get this much attention without doing something ridiculous, like a really crazy thing, or jumping out. That guy had to do Netflix. He had to climb a building with no ropes.
Exactly. We're not doing that.
The dude is just like, I'm not going to the barber for a while.
Yeah.
So I think it's incredibly like inspiring in very like in many ways. I'm not saying that even subtly. But the experience of 4 out of 5. And everybody's like, you guys do a whole big thing around it. And for it to end, it was a draw to West Ham. Take us back. What the hell was that day like?
So there was a game Saturday, and then the fourth game was Saturday, the fifth game was Tuesday. So I get a call Saturday afternoon saying, hey, Frank wants you to come help co-host. We'll fly you out tomorrow. So I was like, I gotta go. I'm not gonna say no to that.
Yeah.
So I go. And
you told your wife, honey, I'm leaving.
Yeah. I'm like, sorry. I'll be right back. So boom, I go and it was good. It was awesome. I mean, I never met him in person. I followed him early on in his journey, but amazing guy. So when you see all these people hating on him, saying things about him, that he's doing it for money, doing it for whatever, he's not a United fan. It's just kind of like, that's not true, man. That's not true. But it was an awesome experience. And the whole thing honestly was just so heartbreaking because he wants the hair gone. We were in the same hotel. We took an Uber to the studio together and he took an hour full to dry his hair. And he got out. I was like, dude, I'm sick of this hair. I want it gone. So he was actually distraught, not only because Man United not getting 3 points, but because of the hair, having to continue the hair challenge. But like you said, unfortunately, people think that's the reason we lost the game. Man United players lost the game because of him. I'm like, dude, come on. The guy just started a challenge. It blew up out of proportion.
Yeah.
And now they want to hate on him. So, but amazing guy. Unfortunately, they weren't going to get 5, and I don't know if it's happening this season. He might have to spend the whole World Cup with that hair, man.
It's tough, man. I mean, it's going to be – how many – it's 400 and something?
Over 500 now.
Oh, my God. So,
yeah.
It's gotten to a point where, like, I want to get your perspective. It's just like when you hear, like, Wayne Rooney and Paul Scholes have opinions on this stuff, like, and you, like, just know the guy with him. No. How does he sort of – feel about that stuff?
I was just associated with it. And when I went home that night, and no matter what app I went on, my face was just next to this guy. I was like, there's no way. All my family members saying, why do I see my family members in Brazil? Why is every channel have you next to it? And I'm just thinking, like, I'm not even the main character here.
You know what I'm saying?
And people were, I was getting hate. Why are you associated with that? Blah, blah. I can't even imagine with him. So I before we left, I was like, man, listen, if you need anything, hit me up. We stay in contact. But it just sucks because it's like, it started innocently. And then people say, if I knew that I could become huge,
you should have done it then.
But it's unfortunate, and but he's doing good. He's doing good. At the end of the day, bro, it is what it is. It's content. If you don't like it,
yeah, like just scroll. Keep
exactly.
Scrolling. No,
exactly.
Man. But you know what? It's good to see that he's like, you're a person to lean on. That he's like, I want to, you know, yeah. There's plenty of people he could have reached out to, but he's like, I want, you're like, yeah, he's like,
we barely talk. Like, he probably has way more people to talk to. I just said, yo, I see what's going on. I'm somewhat associated. If you need anything, bro, just.
No, that's good. But, you know, yeah. It says a lot. So, look, I want Manchester United to lose for other reasons, but I want this man to cut his hair red.
Facts.
So best of luck, Frank. We're obviously, you know, the Cooligans are rooting for you. All right, Ben. European clubs are terrified of dropping $100 million on a flop signing that they are letting spreadsheets pick their number nine. Are guys like Igor Thiago the next lethal saviors of football, or is the striker market just so broken that we're settling for quote-unquote good enough and calling it world class? But so let's talk a little bit about, especially in the Premier League, like who is like the future number nines? Because obviously Erling Haaland seems to be like the mountaintop. Yeah. I mean, clearly, for as long as he wants to be in the Premier League, he will dominate. But who is just after that? So let's give our honorable mentions first.
Okay.
So I'll let you start it off.
Yeah, I think this has been somebody that I've been a fan of for a while now. And I think yesterday's match kind of was a cherry on top, and that's going to be João Pedro. João Pedro from Chelsea.
No, we're too Portuguese.
Yeah, my fault.
We speak very fluent Portuguese. Come on.
But this guy is looking good. I think he's the fourth highest goal scorer in the Premier League this season. 14, had a hat trick yesterday, 5 assists. He's fantastic. I think I really became a fan of him during the FIFA Club World Cup. I think he scored a very important goal in the semifinal and also helped in the final. And from there on out, I was like, this guy's serious. But what he's doing this season, very, very, I'm a big fan. Physical, always knows where to be in the box. Headers, pace, he has it all.
And I will say, we saw him at Brighton last season, or he was there, two seasons, three seasons, something like that? And when seeing him at the Club World Cup, coming, he joined mid-Club World Cup. He was on vacation. They did the signing of him dribbling on the beach. He left, I don't know where, the beaches of Sao Paulo, or what, I don't know where he was exactly. I don't know if Sao Paulo has beaches.
More cities.
Okay, anyway. Rio, whatever. I went to the game against Fluminense.
Yes.
Chelsea against Fluminense in the Club World Cup.
Scored a brace that game, right?
Yeah. Yep. And watching him in person, another, I was like, this is, I mean, this, even Cole Palmer was there. I was like, this is the best player on the pitch. Yep. At the very least, he looked fresh. The biggest issue was like the heat. I mean, the games were so hot in Club World Cup. It looked like it didn't affect him at all. Yep. João Pedro. And the one thing I will say with João Pedro, it feels like he was too swaggy for Brighton. Mm. Brighton couldn't contain the level, I'm him moments. That's not you don't think Brighton when you think that. Brighton is like a system.
No disrespect to the Brighton fans watch Cooligans. But I agree. There's something bigger waiting for him.
Yeah, so I think he's a very good fit. My honorable mention is going to be Hugo Ekitike at Liverpool.
That's a good shot.
And I didn't, we were watching him in Champions League the previous season at Eintracht Frankfurt. And I've been at Frankfurt. I've been to a couple matches out there in Germany. And Hugo Ekitike, I did not think he would settle into the Premier League as quickly as he did. And then especially they sign him. They're trying to get Isak. It's at the time when they're like, he's not leaving Newcastle and all this other stuff. And I'm like, yeah, they need Isak because Hugo Ekitike is coming from Bundesliga. He's not going to really settle in that quickly. And holy crap, was I wrong. He has, so far in the season, 11 goals and 4 assists. And I wouldn't even just say it's just the stats. It is the types of goals. It is they're complex. Some of them are pretty difficult. He's under a lot of pressure. And he plays like a guy that's been playing the Premier League for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So credit to him. So he's my honorable mention.
He's a great feat. Great feat. And also, I want to just capitalize on what you said. Like, I'm thinking, what is Liverpool doing getting another striker? Like, are they insane with Isak? Like, blah, blah. But seeing them both play, I'm like, dude, hold up. Ekitike might be the star.
Ekitike is having, or Isak is having the season that I thought Ekitike was going to have.
Obviously, the injury is unfortunate.
But even before the injury.
Exactly.
It was an absolute nightmare for him. All right. So how about our picks, our official picks? Who do we think is going to be the next like dominant striker in the Premier League?
So my pick has no bias at all.
I don't expect any of that from you.
I'm doing this.
Mr. Objectivity.
Yes. There's no bias at all. This is someone that I've been, I watch sometimes. I watch some of their matches and I think he's going to be good. He's going to do eventually, you know, eventually he'll do good.
I can't wait. The name.
But my pick is Benjamin Sesko. Benjamin said this guy is on fire right now.
Honestly, my favorite dunker in basketball.
Let me tell you. Yeah, if you want to go to the NBA, to the Knicks, to the Nets for a couple of games, sign him up because he can do that too. This guy is unbelievable. I think it's 7 goals in the last, it was 8 games. That sounds nicer than he didn't score yesterday. So 7 goals in the last 9. But it's 8, so 8 goals total. He wasn't a starter in the beginning of the season. Yeah. And he wasn't even a starter under the Carrick era. But now he got his position. He's a super sub. He was a super sub, but now he got a starting position. Assists, one assist. But Benjamin Sesko, for me, is an individual that didn't look like he was fitting in, similar to what you were saying about Ekitike, you know, into the Premier League. But now, what I see from him, this guy is unbelievable, has great composure, able to, you know, get high for the headers as well. They call him Air Sesko for a reason. And I believe Air Sesko is taking off at this exact moment. He's just getting started. I think next season, we're talking about prominent number nines that are going to be for the future. He's going to be a problem next season.
I think it's tough, you know, because the beginning of the season, Amrim and the drama, or even the drama of like Arsenal wanted him, and that was a possibility. But I do think the chaos, he went into a chaotic situation, and I think that stifled him a little bit, because I think what we're seeing now, especially the goal, what was the game winner that he scored? That he was it Mbeumo? I forget who got him the ball.
I think that was Everton.
Was it against Everton where he hit it around? The composure part is that I didn't necessarily expect that he's scoring in in big moments.
Big moments, and
doesn't seem as the lights are not too bright for him.
And difficult. I mean, the West Ham game was 1-1, but to even get a draw that game, that was a brilliant finish.
Sure,
brilliant finish. And I think what you said is facts. Like, it's when we need him, and in a time where Man United, we've tried to find a number nine. It's been terrible, from Weghorst to Hoyland to all these, you know, names. Like, it's crazy to say it, and I don't want to, you know, jump the gun, but it's kind of like this could be the number nine for a couple of years. Something that we've been struggling to find.
I mean, that's a good sign. I mean, what's frustrating, I think, for United fans is like Hoyland leaving and going to Napoli and seemingly having a blast, and then McTominay as well. But is it more they're playing in Serie A? And or
if I speak, I'm in trouble. If I speak, I'm in trouble.
Okay.
If I speak, I'm in trouble.
All right. We don't want to get you cause any problems, bro.
I don't want problems with no Italians out there.
Some of these guys come back from loan and they're looking for you, man.
There's a lot in New York City. A lot of Italians around here. Gotta be careful. Gotta be good.
All right. I'll give my pick and I sort of teased it up top. But Igor Thiago at Brentford is just one of those out of nowhere. And we're seeing 18 goals and one assist. Why so selfish, Igor?
Share the love a little bit. Share the love.
Pass the ball from time to time. How old is Igor Thiago?
I was literally searching that. I think 23, 24.
He is 24 years old, looking all of 42. respectfully, I'm just
someone
saying.
Check his birth certificate. Okay. Check his birth certificate.
But it's as an Everton fan, especially I'm looking at teams like Brentford, and I see when they get players like this, I'm like, bro, this ain't fair. Why you get them?
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm not delusional in saying like Everton is a bigger club than Brentford. That's not a crazy thing to say. I don't think I'm insulting anybody by saying that. But it's like, what is up with the scouting at Everton that they can't find a player like this? Like, he got to the league and is, where'd he come from let's look that up.
We'll figure that out, yeah.
He got there and he's just dominant. He scored a hat trick on Everton, I believe. Yep. And he makes it Club Brugge.
Oh, okay.
Why is it?
That's right. That is club. Yeah, because he had a crazy season.
He makes it look easy. He makes 18 goals. I mean, he's in second in the scoring.
Second behind some other guy named Holland. Yeah, I don't know who he is.
Yeah.
But the fact that he settles in so quickly and on a team that, you know, with a new coach, you think like, oh, it's going to be kind of an adjustment period. And this dude is just like bullying people, scoring goals. And yeah, but like, look, it's been a surprise, but the dude is just is no joke. He is Brazilian, I assume.
Brazilian, yes, he's Brazilian.
Has he ever been
called up to the national team once yet?
Yeah,
once. Which is, at this point, Carlo Ancelotti, I know you're at Copacabana, I know you're having a good time at Carnival and all that. You know, I know you've seen those videos. He's living life over there. He loves it. Now I know why he went to Brazil. But all that to say, he has to be seeing this and being like, all right, you deserve a call up.
Yeah.
It's the Premier League.
Well, without a doubt.
You're doing it in the Premier League. You're not doing it in, you know what I'm saying?
In Serie A for Napoli.
There's friendlies coming up in March. I better see his name on the team sheet.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, and we'll talk some Brazil in the next segment. But yes. Boy, yeah. Look, the Premier League future, as far when it comes to strikers, is looking fairly promising. So yes. I'm excited about it.
Brazil hasn't won a World Cup in over two decades, and here's the reality for us Brazilians. We want one. We want number six. We're sick of getting out to these European teams. We want number six, and the man who's going to fix it all is Carlo Ancelotti. But the question is, with the injuries, with maybe the Jorge Bonito leaving, is Ancelotti going to be able to get us to lift that number six? I don't know. Before I give my panic meter, because there's things happening behind the scenes, Christian, what do you think?
I'm probably as the guest Brazilian today. I'm
beautiful kit, by the way.
Thank you so much. Ronaldinho on the back, by the way. This is my panic meter out of 10. I'm at an 8 because when it came to the qualifiers, I didn't see the consistency or even dominance. I understand Argentina the last 8 to 10 years as basically it's almost like a guaranteed number one, but in CONMEBOL, Brazil were the giants where you're terrified of having to play them. But even when, you know, Bolivia are against them, they're like, yeah, I think we can get a result and stuff like that. Or even the U.S. played a friendly against Brazil, two years ago? And I think drew 1-1. Yep. I'm like, that ain't supposed to happen.
That's not supposed to happen. That's not what the script's supposed to be.
I'm at an 8. I mean, we're looking at some of the stats here, but they finished 5th in World Cup qualifying, and they've added more spots to the World Cup. So this is a little bit concerning. The top scorer, Rafinha, with 5 goals. But yeah, they have a history, obviously.
History, though.
Yeah. How do we look forward? What about where are you at?
Yeah, I'm at, listen, if you asked me a couple months ago, I'd probably be nicer. But injuries that have been showing up lately, I'm at a 6. I'm at a 6 because here's the truth, man. Like, Rodrigo out is confirmed.
That's a brutal.
That hurts.
That's a brutal
Neymar
injury.
Is somebody that's the engine of the Brazilian national team's for the last 15 years, you know what I'm saying? So he's not even 100% sure if he's going to make it, you know, so we'll see that. Other injuries like Militão as well, that's not fully recovered yet. Mm-hmm. But the thing is this, we have a lot of options up top, a lot of options. So it gets to a point where it's like, will Ancelotti be able to establish something with all this talent, given that it's, 3-4 months away in the tournament? So I'm at a 6 because I think even though we have injuries, even though we didn't look too hot in the Copa America, at the end of the day, when you have talent, sometimes talent can make things happen. But hard work beats talent. And sometimes I feel like they're not working hard over there.
That's the thing. It's like the last, when they won in 2002.
Yes.
Right? And I didn't really start paying attention to soccer like until really the 2002 is when I was like kind of like into it. But 2006 is when I was like, when Italy won and I was,
what a time.
Yeah, I was living in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn. And I went, I remember going to Bensonhurst where all the Italians were and they were celebrating on the street. And that was like the first time I saw like how a World Cup could affect like the community and stuff like that. I was like that's why I was like really enamored and fell in love with the sport. But the thing I knew, even in 2002, I was like, Brazil is like the
powerhouse.
R9. Every World Cup, I'm like, all right, they're going to do the thing that they always do. And it's just, especially in the 2018 and 22, it's just missing. I mean, the storylines get are Neymar flopping, and yeah, it's yeah. never the beautiful football that the futebol we want to see. So
I think a lot of people in Brazil also agree with that. If you could bring back that graphic of where they were at or where they got eliminated every single year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Let's see that.
Because I think it's very interesting to see. 2010, that was probably one of the worst. That was when Fredji was up top. Do you remember Fredji?
No,
number nine, Fred.
Okay.
2014, we don't talk about
that. Midfielder Fred?
No.
Different Fred.
Different Fred.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, now I remember.
Curly hair Fred.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
2014, we don't talk about because I'm traumatized and I don't want to talk about the semifinal. Please, everybody on the page. Let me click every button because that was trauma. I was crying that day, all day.
Yeah, yeah.
So 7-1. Oh, gosh.
Brutal.
Anyways, so 2018, that one hurt. I think that was against Belgium. The crazy Courtois save last minute. Mm-hmm. 2022, penalties. When I don't know why, when you're up 1-0 against Croatia, you want to get everybody up. That was Fredji, the midfielder's fault. CDM going play up top. They concede. We go to penalties. We lose. All these things could have been avoided. But I feel like 2022 was the time that we really could have done it. We would have versed Argentina in the semifinal, but we'll see what happens. I think the minimum we'll get to is the quarterfinals, and some people think that's crazy, but also given the fact of the format of this World Cup, I think it's a little bit not easier, but it's more probable.
The group is should be fairly walk in the park.
Exactly.
So it shouldn't be that great. My panic tells me there's going to be a bigger disappointment, like out in the round of 16.
Brazil round of 16?
Yeah, yeah. That's but and I mentioned this.
Take off that kit right now. Take off that kit right now.
I mentioned it to our producer. He was like, what? In our production guy, he's like, what? Why did we have round 16? I'm like, that's how nervous I am. Shoot, but man. Given the, again, more teams in the World Cup, it should be more likely to at least get, it should be easier to get to the quarterfinal than it was in the past.
Yes, yes.
But the Rodrigo injury, we don't know what's happening with Neymar. You know, now, like, we'll see. Hopefully, Igor Thiago maybe gets called.
But that's the thing. They have so many replacements. Igor Thiago, Jean-Pedro, Endrick, Vinny,
yeah.
Cunha. Like, there's a lot of options. Even the midfield's pretty good, too. Joe Linton, who had a great game yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Bruno G., you know, even Casemiro, there's a lot of players that Ederson or Alisson, you choose, pick your poison, like, who's better.
Sure.
It's like, for me, I think there's a lot of options, but the main thing's going to be, like, chemistry is the main thing. You look at teams like Spain, France, they got a little bit more chemistry in there.
It sometimes feels like is the, and maybe this is on Carlo Ancelotti to figure out, like, how much do we install some sort of system or do, but Carlo Ancelotti is the king of, like, I just put
let the
best
boys
player,
play.
Let the boys play, and they figure it out. So is that what they need? Maybe this is, maybe in the past, that's what they've tried to be a bit more structured, and it's led to kind of these disappointments at the World Cup. And maybe Carlo could change that. So we'll see. Carlo Ancelotti, obviously his historic manager, five-time Champions League winner at AC Milan and Real Madrid. And he's been the manager of Brazil since May 2025.
Having that aura on the sideline, though, always helps. Imagine, like, you're tired of a game. You look to the right and Carlo Ancelotti's there. It's like, all right, hold on. Chewing his gum. It's like,
just
all right.
Just sipping a caipirinha. Chilling there.
Mid-game caipirinha.
He's like, don't judge me.
What do we do, Carlo? Joga.
Joga. Joga. Figure it out. No, man. I want to see, you know, especially at this World Cup and being played in North America, you want to see a Brazil. And there's so many vibrant Brazilian communities all across the country.
Yeah.
We saw it was all even awesome during the Club World Cup, seeing that as well.
Yeah.
So you want them to have a good old little tournament. So
yeah. A lot of Brazilian communities. I mean, you go to Orlando, Boston, Jersey, like, they love the East Coast.
Yeah, yeah.
But man, everyone loves to see Joga Bonita. I know it's not the big names that people love, like Ronaldinho, Kaká, all that, but I don't know. Something about me is just like, it's going to be a little bit different this year.
Yeah.
And it might be in the wrong way. You might be right.
I think it's the Joga Bonito has been, I think, I don't know if people are trying to shut it. Like, look at all this that's going on with Vinicius. Like, you're trying to take away that.
You can't,
like,
dance style, anymore?
Like, you can't dance anymore? Like, so I think, the players, like, at their clubs, they might be a little bit more stifled. Like, oh, don't do that. But when they get, this is their time. Like, yo, do your thing.
And I will say, similar to what we saw with Messi in the last World Cup, how they were dying for him. If Neymar comes back, we might see something similar, because he's already talking about retiring in the end of 2026.
Yeah.
If he comes back, there might be a thing where it's like, yo, Neymar deserves this World Cup. Let's put our bodies on the line for him. So.
We'll see if he gets called up. I mean, he scored a bunch of goals so far the last couple weeks.
I just hope he doesn't get injured. I just hope he doesn't get injured.
But did you see that somebody tackled him the other day? Like a you have a beef with Neymar?
As a Brazilian, yeah. Don't touch him. Do not touch that guy. He's our gem. Don't touch him. But.
I understand if some Dutch guy does it, but like, what the hell are they doing out in Brazil? Protect your king.
Yeah, protect him.
So, all right, we'll see, man.
We'll see.
All right, let's wrap up there. Matty FC,
thank you
so much. I know you're not a podcast guy. You're more of a streamer. You do stuff on social media. But you absolutely crushed
it,
bro.
Brother. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Get on the mic.
I got to get on the mic more.
You know what you're doing, bro. So, no,
appreciate
thank you.
That.
Everybody, I mean, obviously, if you're a Manchester United fan, I mean, there's very fewer people that you need to be following. But Matty FC does covers a bunch of stuff around the game. Matty FC, is it Matty FC underscore?
_ There's a guy over there named Matthew Hart. I'm going at the end of the other day. At the end of the other day, I'll pay you a $500. I raise the stakes every time. But yes, Matty FC _.
Okay. Follow him on all socials. And he has a great YouTube channel as well. So make sure you go check that out. So thank you. Thank you so much for stepping in for Alexis.
Hooligans is goated. Thank you guys so much for having me. Had a great time.
Absolutely honored. All right. Make sure you follow us everywhere at Soccer Cooligans on all socials. Hit like on YouTube on this video. Feel free to subscribe as well. We'll be back on Monday with a brand new episode. Do we have any guests on Monday? No, I don't think so. Okay. But next up, actually, I can't say it. I can't say it out loud just yet. But next week, or in the next like week or two, we're going to have one of the biggest guests we've ever had on the show. And if you are a U.S. men's national team fan, you better lock in right now because you're going to be quite excited about it. So one little tease.
Uh-oh. I'm hyped now. I'm hyped.
One little tease I'll give. Everybody, thank you again for tuning in. We appreciate it. Alexis, we'll be back on Monday. Obrigado.
Obrigado.
Meu amigo.
My guy.
Legal. Bro.
We got some work to do, bro.
We're figuring it out. My Portuguese lessons are paying off.
They are. Ciao. Ciao, gente.
Ciao, gente. Vinho tinto.
What's up there?
I'm learning about foods right now, so it's all good. All right. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Take care. I hope all your teams lose. Peace.